Support for the Legislative Gazette comes from New York State United Teachers, working to support students, educators, and public schools as the center of their communities with Public Schools Unite Us initiative, and United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org. Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer was in Rensselaer this week calling on New Yorkers and all Americans to protect the federal food program, SNAP. The Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas was there and filed this report.
Flanked by church leaders and advocates for the hungry, the Democrat explained the USDA has already canceled $1 billion in food assistance. And he says cutting the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program benefits would impact 112,000 people in the Capital Region and 3 million families across New York State.
The Regional Food Bank of Northeastern New York has already been devastated by these cuts. They've had 27 tractor trailers full of food canceled. 1 million pounds of fruits, vegetables, eggs, meat. And guess where most of that comes from? New York farmers.
Schumer says the country is on the precipice of a disaster as Republicans push to pass a tax bill with $230 billion in cuts. Lindsay Wright is the mother of a special needs child dealing with food insecurity. She says qualifying for SNAP benefits was already challenging without the cuts.
So I was getting $23 a month at one point, and then they cut me off because I went over, because my son started getting his own Social Security. So that's kind of crazy, but that's for him. That's for him to get things he needs. That's for him to go to these gyms. That's for him to, you know, just be able to like live in life and be able to have fun with other kids like him.
Wright says she relies heavily on local food pantries, but her son's special diet severely limits her choices.
It's actually based on call. You have to make an appointment, so which is great. But it is hard to get an appointment sometimes. You have to wait a couple weeks because it's already filled up.
Natasha Pernica is executive director of food pantries for the Capital District. She says the coalition of 70 food banks provided groceries to 104,000 people in 2023, up 42% over the previous year.
These are working families, working people. In fact, I was at a coffee shop the other day filling up a box of coffee to take to a meeting for work. And the woman who was getting the coffee said, oh, what meeting is this for? And I said, oh, a coalition of food pantries. And she said, oh, I just tried calling to find food this morning. She said, I work three jobs and I'm a nursing student and I'm having a really hard time getting food.
Schumer's visit comes as Congress continues drafting President Trump's domestic agenda, what the president calls a big, beautiful bill he wants lawmakers to approve.
We're calling on our New York House Republicans to block this bill. In this region is Congresswoman Stefanik. Is she going to stand for this?
Stefanik's office did not immediately reply to a request for comment.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas.
Federal funding cuts have been a top priority for President Donald Trump. He's slashed support for schools, for scientific research, for arts and libraries. He's also laid off more than 120,000 federal workers, and some of those cuts are unfolding in rural northern New York. The New York Public News Network's Emily Russell reports.
Jerry Huntley tried for years to get a grant from the National Endowment for the Humanities. Huntley is the president of Our Story Bridge. It's a storytelling project she started out of the Keene Public Library. Then last fall, she got the news. The NEH had awarded her a $35,000 grant.
We were so excited. We are a small nonprofit, and to get a direct NEH grant was amazing.
The money would pay for a panel of experts, many from upstate New York. They'd listen to about 1,200 recorded stories and then write a strategic plan for how to get those stories into schools. In late March, Huntley issued a press release announcing the federal funding.
Then, just 10 days after the press release had been picked up, we got the termination letter.
That letter says Huntley's project is no longer in line with the NEH. Quote, your grant's immediate termination is necessary to safeguard the interests of the federal government, including its fiscal priorities, unquote. At a speech to Congress in early March, President Donald Trump laid out his priorities to pull back federal funding and weed out alleged fraud.
The Government Accountability Office, a federal government office, has estimated annual fraud of over $500 billion in our nation, and we are working very hard to stop it. We're going to.
Overseen by Elon Musk, the Department of Government Efficiency claims it's cut $150 billion so far. The New York Times has found those receipts to be full of errors and inflated successes. Jerry Huntley says she knows there's some wasteful spending, and she believes it should be dealt with in a thoughtful and thorough way.
But making cuts so that there are headlines about making cuts is damaging our country, especially our children.
Other arts and education centers around the North Country are also seeing cuts. The ADKX Museum on Blue Mountain Lake is set to lose about $100,000. The Norwood Village Green Concert Series in St. Lawrence County expects to lose a $3,500 federal grant. And the Wild Center in Tupper Lake lost funding for all eight of its AmeriCorps positions. Hillary Logan Deshane is the Wild Center's deputy director.
It wasn't you have 2 weeks or you have a month to wind down, figure this out. It's no, as of today, everything's done. No more money, no more health insurance. And honestly, there was some tears, myself included.
Those eight AmeriCorps members got laid off immediately, though they all volunteered to keep working. They had already worked more than 8,000 hours at the Wild Center and around the Tupper Lake schools and public library. The Wild Center is now trying to raise about $70,000 to bring them back on payroll. Logan Deshane says the layoffs cut into the broader impact the Wild Center has in the Adirondacks.
We're an economic driver for the region. We bring millions of dollars to this region in economic activity. We're proud of that. That is one of the reasons that we're here.
Another main target for the Trump administration's budget cuts is public education. Earlier this month, it announced plans to cut $1 billion in federal funding for mental health services. That would impact schools like Saranac Lake, which is already in a tight budget bind. Superintendent Diane Fox says lately she's tried not to check the news so much because of the stress it's causing.
All I can control is my little piece of the world here, and I can't fully control that either. But I am trying to tell the staff that we're going to be okay, that this is rocky times. The boat is rocking a little bit. We need to just hang on.
The farming community is also trying to hang on while facing cuts and uncertainty. Earlier this spring, the Trump administration froze billions of dollars in USDA grants. Funding for some Adirondack farms has been restored, but Elizabeth Lee from the Cornell Cooperative Extension for Essex County says the stakes are high in an agricultural region like the North Country.
No farms, no food. That's really our food system is really fragile and important. And the big problem is the destabilization of the organizations that support farmers.
One organization that supports farmers by helping them sell their products is the Essex Food Hub in Westport. Last year, it bought $500,000 worth of food from nearly 40 local farmers. Lindsay Willimane is the executive director of the hub. Because about 40% of her budget comes from federal USDA grants, Willimane is now scrambling to diversify her funding. But so are a lot of other local organizations, which is putting more pressure and reliance on private funding.
Because everybody in the nonprofit sector is experiencing this, whether they're a food hub or a health center, there's a lot more competition for grants from private foundations and private donations.
So much of this moment is still unfolding. Some federal grants have been restored in recent weeks. Other cuts are being challenged in court. Meanwhile, Trump's proposed budget would slash funding for rural airports, heating assistance, and healthcare services in the North Country. So more cuts could be coming in the months and years ahead. In Saranac Lake, I'm Emily Russell for the New York Public News Network.
Listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. This week I sat down with New York State Republican Assembly Minority Leader Will Barclay and spoke to him about the $254 billion state budget. Barclay says the price tag is too high.
Well, let me say this. The budget process was better this year, believe it or not, even though the budget was late. I think the latest has been in a decade. We're over a month late on it. This year, we passed it in almost daylight. We passed it around 9:30. I think we finished up in the Assembly. Actually beat the Senate, which is rare for the Assembly to do. Usually we go a day or so longer than the Senate. So I was pleased, at least from that standpoint, from a process standpoint, although there wasn't as much transparency, and obviously the input from the Republican Party doesn't get heard as much, obviously, as the majority. So that's always, I think, issues that can be worked upon and improved upon. The budget itself, as you said, it's a huge, massive $254 billion. That's $13 billion more than last year. David, I may have mentioned this to you before. I started here in the Assembly a long time ago, but not that long ago, and it was $78 billion when I started. So we've gone for a little over 20 years. We've gone from $78 billion to $254 billion. In the last 5 years alone, I had my staff pull this statistic. It's increased $77 billion, or 43%. So, you know, we've been spending like drunken sailors. I think that cliche works. It's very accurate. And the alarm bells I've been trying to set off is, this is great right now. It's fun while it lasts, but this is not a sustainable system. At some point, this is going to have to be reined in, or we're going to have to face, you know, some very serious, serious consequences.
Will Barclay, I can hear your argument now, because so many, even on the Democratic side, are concerned. I mean, you have what is massive cuts from the federal government, and we've continued to spend here in New York. It just seems to me you're going to end up in a special session in the fall, and they'll be cutting that will have to take place then.
Yeah, I would have hoped, and I actually mentioned this to the governor, that, you know, let's show some constraint in our spending now instead of saying we'll have to come back and, you know, do mid-year cuts. Why not show just some constraint? And when I say, you know, everybody runs around and says, well, we can't, what are you going to cut? What are you going to cut? I always say, we don't have to cut anything. What we have to do is just slow the growth. You know, just in, for instance, in school aid spending, we have 7.3 fewer students than we did 10 years ago, 192,000 less students, but our spending in education has gone up 61% during that same time. So again, I don't think we have to go crazy and cut, bare the bone right down cuts. But what we ought to do is really just slow the growth of spending. We can't do 5 to 10% increases every year.
Well, what about this process you're talking about? You say it was better, and yet transparency is still an issue. You have Senator Skoufis, a Democrat, who's gone directly after the governor, saying it's a big power grab, that she wants more executive control, and she's cutting out many of the legislators in the process, and they even want to do a constitutional amendment. Doesn't look like that'll probably happen in the Senate, but what do you make of that?
Well, I do find that dangerous, and I've learned my lessons from the past when, I mean, dangerous to how much power the governor has in the budgetary process and what we gave her to actually make unilateral cuts throughout the year, if need be. You know, you recall, we gave a lot of power to Governor Cuomo during the COVID era, and I think, you know, hindsight, I think that was a mistake. So I think we should have learned our lesson from that and not provide all this power, but you know, in New York, the governor does have tremendous power during this budget process, and particularly when the budget's late, she could, if she wanted, to start putting policy in any of the budget extenders and force the legislature to make a decision whether they want to, you know, keep government running or accept her policies. David Paterson did that a number of years ago. Fortunately, the governor did not do that, but I'd be open, you know, to taking, you know, making a more balanced process, giving the legislature some more power. The problem I have, of course, is, you know, the governor tends to be a little bit more conservative in the budgetary process versus the legislature. So you give the legislature too much power, I think we're going to continue on with some of the spending woes that we have. So that, you know, I'd like to see, I guess, what exactly is being proposed in a constitutional amendment before jumping on board and saying it's a great idea.
Well, and I mean, on the national level with DOGE, isn't that also a bypass of the legislature in an attempt to cut spending?
Well, yeah, it depends on what you call that. I mean, they would claim that's, you know, fraud and waste. I don't know if you need the legislature to always get back on and say you can't cut this. This is fraudulent. And I think in the national, they give the executive branch like blocks of money to spend how the executive seems appropriate. So, you know, I don't necessarily think that's an apples to apples comparison.
Well, let's stick with just a moment the flip side of the inevitable special session we just spoke about, because the governor came out and said, and I have the quote here, "I have to be honest with everyone in the state. We've already lost $1.3 billion in funding from the federal government under the Trump administration. I expect we're going to lose more," she said at a press event in Syracuse. "I can't stand here and commit that we're going to be able to backfill every dollar that's lost from the federal government. So I encourage the delegation, everybody who lives in this region and represents this area, to really fight hard in Washington to try to get that money back." Now, everything is in a political context here. How much of these moves are meant from the Democratic side, Republican Will Barkley, Assembly Minority Leader, to hoist this all on the Republicans? In other words, we're going to put out a $254 billion budget, check every wish list we have, and then when the mean old Republicans come along and cut things, we can blame them.
Right. Well, I appreciate you making that argument, David. I completely agree. First, let's talk about the cuts, because as far as I can see, these haven't really materialized. I'm not sure what she's referring to. For instance, there was some COVID money, I think $300 or $400 million, that wasn't spent that the government, you know, the feds took back, that seemed wholly appropriate in the light of the fact that the state hadn't spent that money. We're no longer in the COVID pandemic. So I don't know what she's talking about with these cuts, but there's been a lot of fear mongering out there, but I really haven't heard from the Trump administration exactly what the cuts, you know, are being proposed. In fact, I don't know if there are many cuts at all in the proposed federal budget. So some of this, I think, is directly, you're right on target, is the fact that this is more fear mongering and political rhetoric coming from the Democrats trying to blame Trump, really Trump, for these when they really haven't materialized yet so far. I'm not saying that's not possible. They could come into existence. I mean, we spend a lot of money on Medicaid, for instance, and I could see some reform ultimately there that may cause New York to lose.
That's huge, isn't it, Will? Come on, Medicaid is huge. If that's that's threatened, that's billions of dollars, and the state could be suffering.
We could be, but shouldn't we look to? We can't just continue to do what we continue to do. It's just not sustainable. So maybe those cuts really, instead of saying cutting the funding, we're really reforming the program and hopefully provide funding to those who need it outside of providing, you know, free health, government health care to everybody in the state.
That's New York State Republican Assembly Minority Leader Will Barkley. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. The state budget signed by New York Governor Kathy Hochul last week includes investments to build new homes and expand infrastructure, as well as legislation intended to help first-time home buyers enter a challenging market. To learn about how the $254 billion state budget affects would-be buyers, the Legislative Gazette's Lucas Willard spoke with Michael Borges, Executive Director of the Rural Housing Coalition of New York.
Well, I think the legislature and the governor made targeted investments in addressing the housing crisis in the state. Specifically, one of the items that was included early on in the executive budget and made it into the final budget was $100 million in infrastructure funding tied to housing, pro-housing communities in particular. In rural areas, feel that the lack of infrastructure is often an impediment to building new housing. So we were pleased with that. Also, there was additional investments in housing programs that addressed the specific needs of rural housing projects, because a lot of the bigger programs don't really apply or applicable to rural areas. So there was some investments in some of the smaller programs, like the Small Rental Development Initiative, SARDI it's called. It was an increase from $7 to $10 million, and that helps with the construction of affordable housing of 4 to 20 units. So very pleased with that as well.
Now, you had mentioned infrastructure being one of the impediments for developing housing in rural areas. And we often think of when governments seek to build housing that the easiest place to do that might be in cities where there's more people and the infrastructure is already there in the ground. But what beyond infrastructure are some of the hurdles that rural communities face even some that may want to build housing or homes and they need some state help on?
Yeah, so the three main obstacles are infrastructure. Lack of infrastructure was one. Two was lack of local capacity. And again, the budget had additional funding, about a 6% increase in funding for rural housing nonprofits that undertake a lot of the work that's done in rural areas of the state. And then the last was targeted programs at rural communities. So we touched upon that earlier, talking about the Small Rental Development Initiative, which really is targeted to, again, small rural communities that lack infrastructure, because this program would help fund the development of 4 to 20 units, where most of the tax credits and some of the larger programs are really targeted to 60, 100 units of affordable housing, which are not suitable for small rural communities. So there's that. There was also funding for the USDA 515 preservation program. And that's a new thing that we got funded last year in the budget. And that helps with the preservation of, again, affordable rental housing in rural areas that was built by the U.S. Department of Agriculture back in the 80s and 90s. Those mortgages are expiring on those properties and they're 30 years old. So they need a lot of work to maintain their affordability and their availability to rural residents. So we're very pleased with that as well.
One of the items in the budget is a restriction on large companies, private equity firms, from purchasing single family and two family homes. They have to wait 90 days before making that bid. What do you think about this legislation that's included in the budget?
Yeah, you know, it's a real problem with investment firms, real estate speculators buying up properties, whether they're single family homes, mobile home parks have been targeted in the past. So we applaud the efforts to limit the ability of these third parties to scoop up properties and take them off the market and have a negative impact, really, on the communities in which they're located.
Is there any legislation your organization advocated for that didn't make it over the finish line and you're hoping to see some action on before the end of the legislative session?
Yeah, I mean, we're hoping to get some legislation passed that would make permanent in state statute, the Small Rental Development Initiative, which is only really in budget language. We'd also like to see some permanency in state statute for the Mobile Home Replacement Program. It's called MMHR. That would allow for an increase in grants to replace dilapidated and unsafe mobile homes. Because in New York, about 10% of the housing stock in rural communities is made up of mobile homes, and the state needs to step up and do more to protect that valuable, affordable housing option for rural communities.
Obviously, the state budget comes at a time when there's a lot of change in federal policy and withholding of funds and a lot of uncertainty as well. Are there any programs that are seeing cuts right now or you're worried may seem cuts that could impact homeowners or prospective homeowners in rural areas?
Yeah, I mean, there were cuts even last year before Trump took office to the USDA, the U.S. Department of Agricultural Rural Housing Programs. And so we've seen further additional cuts in that area, and the president's proposed budget also continues that trend. So that, you know, that will trickle down to rural communities, which do rely on a lot of these grants and loans, subsidized loans, to afford to buy housing and build housing. So that is continued to be a concern, and we'll see what happens in Congress and see if they step up to protect these programs.
That's Michael Borges, Executive Director of the Rural Housing Coalition of New York, speaking with the Legislative Gazette's Lucas Willard. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. New York State lawmakers are taking a fresh look at food regulations. WNYC's Jimmy Vielkind reports.
I can help you, sir.
At the Saturday morning farmers market in Troy, New York, there's a steady stream of customers at the Lovin' Mama stand. Owner Corrine Hatch says people seek out their flowers and organic greens.
Our lettuce is like buttery.
When she's not on the farm, Hatch pushes for a state bill that would increase transparency on what comes in packaged foods.
I really want to see a world where we prioritize healthy food getting into the hands of everybody.
Hatch is part of a broad coalition pushing for New York State to step up where the Federal Food and Drug Administration hasn't. Advocates say the GRAS loophole, which stands for Generally Recognized as Safe, lets companies put additives in packaged foods without giving the FDA a chance to review them. State Senator Brian Kavanaugh is a Democrat from Manhattan. He's sponsoring a bill that would make companies disclose what they're doing.
I think it is a shock to most Americans that food producers can add new, obscure chemicals to your food without even telling anyone.
On this issue, Kavanaugh is singing the same tune as the Trump administration. Health and Human Services Secretary Robert F. Kennedy has ordered the FDA to take a look at the loopholes. His Make America Healthy Again movement, or MAHA, helped Trump win the election.
This issue isn't going away. Moms aren't going to return to wanting chemicals in our food that are banned in other developed countries.
Associations representing the food industry say additives help bolster nutrition and keep food from spoiling. John Hewitt of the Consumer Brands Association, which includes packaged product makers, opposes Kavanaugh's bill.
Those food additives and those GRAS ingredients all go through a scientific review process, and we've committed as an association and as an industry of working with the FDA to revise and improve the GRAS process at the federal level.
He says the FDA should be the single regulator for products sold nationwide. In Albany, I'm Jimmy Vielkind for the New York Public News Network.
And that about does it for this week's show. The Legislative Gazette is a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio. We had help from the New York Public News Network. You can listen anytime at WAMCpodcast.org or anywhere you get your podcasts. Look for program number 2520. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina. Support for the Legislative Gazette comes from United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org.